Hello, friends, and welcome to Coach Cut's Corner. Streaming bright from Michigan's capital city, this podcast is dedicated to helping you better understand the who, the what, and the why of mental performance, personal growth, and Lansing Stars baseball. Coach Cut's Corner, brought to you by Eyewash.
In collaboration with Lansing Community College.
And now here's your host, Stephen Cutter.
Welcome to Coach Cut's Corner. Thank you for tuning in and subscribing. Each week, I aim to provide insights into our program and inspire you to challenge yourself, just as I continue to challenge myself. My goal is to help you enhance your life through these conversations. In addition to this podcast, I offer mental skills coaching for athletes at all levels, from the youth to professional. To learn more, visit CoachCutter.com. This morning in the WLNZ studios, I have our assistant coach, Jeff Allen. Welcome to the studios, Jeff.
Thank you.
You're somewhat becoming a co-host on this podcast, so that's a great thing. Oftentimes, we do have our assistant coaches on here, and we'd like to talk about not only what we're doing in the program and in the community, but also about, you know, more and a little bit deeper topics as well. And today, we're going to talk about the impact of that parents and role models and support systems play on athlete development, and kind of what that looks like and some pitfalls to avoid and some lessons we've learned along the way. I know my perspective is I've had children that have played sports, you know, for quite a long time. And so I've been a parent. I've also been a coach, and I've got to see it from both sides of the fence. And it's a very, very large piece. We often think about like athlete development just being on what they do in practice, but the things outside of practice and the mentors that they have or that they don't have make a huge impact. So we're going to get in that, and we're going to have somewhat of a talking point of just, you know, the role that all these people play in supporting student athletes. So you know, you talked about this. Is there a reason why, as we were talking before we went live, does this resonate with you in some way?
Absolutely. I think that I've really had a lot of great role models and a great support system in my life. It's come from all over the place, whether that be parents, grandparents, people in the community, teachers, coaches. Just I feel like Not everybody realizes the impact that they're able to make. And some people, it's a lot like when we were talking about leadership at the beginning of the year, where, you know, sometimes people are scared to take on that role just because they've never done it. But it's a learned skill. So I think that anybody's really capable of being a support system or a mentor to somebody, but it's just about having the right intentions going into it.
Yeah, when you start with athletes or student athletes, you start with the inner circle, and that's usually the parents, and the encouragement and support from the parents is what I feel is the most important. And in my time of coaching youth sports and in my time of being a parent, I know that I didn't do a great job of doing that as a parent. And so I was able to step back and kind of look and learn from the mistakes that I had made and think about things like, you know, that's probably not real helpful. And when I did that, then I realized from a coaching standpoint that telling a kid to just throw strikes or just breathe, right, or, you know, the things that we've probably talked about on this podcast a few times, weren't helpful. So yeah, what can be helpful? And it really starts with the inner circle and the parents. And they parents provide a foundation for belief, and they provide that foundation that then gets transferred to the field when they play. So it starts there. And one of the bigger things when I was coaching at the youth level was just the balancing expectations.
Right. Yeah.
I felt like, you know, if my child scored, you know, 20 points in a game, then I was a great parent. You know, if my child did something great, I was great. And if my child didn't, I wasn't, you know, great. Right. And I realized down the road, thankfully it wasn't super far down the road, but learned that, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with what type of parent I am. You know, it's their skills that they're showing off right now and the ability to be able to balance those expectations on, you know, what's most important. And then obviously coming through with, you know, positive reinforcement for that kind of things. And so if you were a basketball player, I think the two biggest questions players get asked after a game is, did you win? And number two is, how many points you score?
Yeah. Yep.
And so it ends up reinforcing kind of the wrong things. Not that winning isn't super important in life and on the court or on the field, but there are more important things, especially at the younger ages. Maybe if you're getting paid to win, you can look at it just a little bit differently. But when you're trying to cultivate love into a sport, it's important to reinforce really the intrinsic stuff. And then if you don't, you're going to have some pitfalls. And, I've certainly learned quite a few along the way. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, through all of this, I see a lot of similarities to what we talk about in the program as far as like playing to a standard, not a scoreboard, and that kind of goes along the same lines of what you were talking about, where it might not be all about, you know, scoring 20 points. It might just be about, okay, what did you plan on getting better at this week, and did you achieve that? What did you do to achieve that? Just kind of setting plans in motion for them. And
really don't want people that are listening to this to think, oh, it's just softness. It's like, you know, just don't worry about scoring, don't worry about winning, but it's not that at all. It's deeper than that. And the standards, holding yourself to a standard, those standards can be really high.
Yeah.
And they don't have to be super low standards. But if you keep your standards where they're more intrinsic based, you'll find typically that you're gonna have some more success. And if you can have people in your support, in your close circle, that can have those same standards, you're going to find that kids typically do better than kids that don't have that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think one thing that's really helped me with being able to kind of, and I don't know if everybody sees me as a mentor or a role model, but I try to be. And I think one thing that helps me with that is just being able to realize that, especially in the game of baseball is an extremely difficult sport. Mm-hmm. No matter if it's the defensive side, the pitching side, the hitting side, there's always going to be failures, but it's just about being able to take the lessons that you can from those and kind of move forward with it.
So we started inner circle. Now let's go outside that circle a little bit wider and talk about, you know, how important the role models are as, you know, guiding lights in what you're trying to do. And I know for me, this is deeply tied to my journey as a coach and as an individual. And when I thought about this, it's, you know, my mom instilled the importance of perseverance and compassion, teaching me how to balance super high expectations with unwavering support. My grandpa Bob, he never missed a game when I was growing up, you know, from football, basketball, baseball. He was always there. And what's neat about that is when I got, you know, in my coaching journey, he was still coming to the games. You know, he didn't know, you know, certain any of the players, and so that was pretty neat. But he always kind of led with a quiet strength and humility. And then my Uncle Paul, his relentless work ethic showed me the value of pushing through challenges and never settling for less than, a word I use a lot now is excellence. And I think these figures shape not just my approach to life, but also how I aim to inspire the people that I'm around on an everyday basis. And so when we talk about role models as guiding lights, those are three people in my life, and I've had a lot of fingerprints, not only in my coaching journey on myself, but also in, you know, fingerprints on me from before my coaching journey, and people that were role models. So those are three that really stood out to me. I know you mentioned a couple at the beginning of the show, but man, the role models in your life are so impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've had tons of them. I mean, especially, I feel really blessed to have come from my town, just because, you know, growing up, my parents had me at a pretty young age, so I felt like I kind of grew up with them in a way. Not saying that they didn't give me any guidance or, you know, demonstrate any of those role model traits, but there was a lot of help from the community with that, and I feel very lucky to have so many great people in my life that were willing to step in when, you know, they didn't really need to. It was just out of purely wanting to see me do the best that I possibly could. So I think that's what I mean when I mention the intentions going into it is just out of the pure, I'm going to say the G word, but the pure goodness out of your heart. And I got 10. but yeah, I think that it's great to have those intentions and just wanting to better people's lives, no matter if they're close to you or not.
Yeah, that's very powerful stuff. And I do want to add that you can still get to where you're trying to go without role models,
right?
But role models and you can still get to where you're trying to go without family support. People have proven that time and time again, but you can make such a large impact with kids if you can provide them with support and be a role model and be encouraging, but then also provide them with standards. Like, this is where we need to be. You're not there yet, but these are the bricks you need to stack to get there. Right. And I'm going to support you through this. And I'm also going to hold you accountable when you're not stacking the bricks to get to that spot. And I think that when we were kind of talking about this, I thought about like some of the key qualities and role models that I had witnessed in my time of growing up, but then also in my time of coaching and watching parents, whether they're on the fence or in the bleachers, just kind of watching that piece of it, because that's always somewhat fascinated me. And then somehow through that whole process, I'm intentional about watching what other parents are doing and what they're saying or what they're not saying. And then, you know, I go watch my daughter's high school softball games and I'm sitting in left field, you know, yeah, away from the back of the fence, and oh, you know, he doesn't like people, you know, or whatever is getting said. And like, well, actually, I don't think you understand. It's you know, it's a lot of noise. But circling back to some of the key qualities of role models for me, and I think it's integrity, resilience, passion, and work ethic. Integrity involves doing the right thing even when no one is watching. And that really serves as a foundation of a word we use often, which is trust. Resilience shows in how they respond to challenges and setbacks and modeling grit and things like determination. And passion really fuels the commitment and enthusiasm for what people are trying to do, and it also helps inspire them to pursue, another great word, you know, excellence. And yeah, and there's definitely some key traits to role models, and they're for the most part pretty similar, and they really revolve around integrity, resilience, passion, and, you know, work ethic. So do you feel like that you've seen instances where on the maybe the bad side of the coin, where the the influence hasn't been great for kids in your time with coaching and playing? Have you had teammates that have had? Because when I talk about great, I think we might think about the parent that's standing on the fence screaming at the kid because he just struck out. But I'm not necessarily talking about that. I'm talking about another word, and that's pressure.
Yes.
And pressure to perform. And if you don't perform, we're going to have a long car ride home. And, yeah. And we're driving right past that ice cream shop that you wanted to get. Because we're going to go home, we're going to practice, and we're going to get this ironed out. Because I'm not going to look stupid sitting in my bag chair while you don't perform. Have you seen that? Because I feel like, yes, I saw that. I was that person at 1.2. Yep. I saw that at the little league level. I saw it at the high school level. And holy smokes, still see it at the college level.
Yeah, yeah. It never really goes away, I feel like. I've had a lot of teammates that I've played with that felt an immense amount of pressure from their parents, where it's like, all right, if I don't get two hits today, mom and dad aren't going to talk to me for a week.
Did you feel pressure when you played?
At the beginning of my playing career, I would say in like early high school, I felt there was a lot of pressure just because I knew that I had a goal of playing college baseball, and I knew that if I didn't perform, that it'd be kind of hard to do that. So I did put a little bit of pressure on myself, but I think my parents always did a decent job of being able to put things into perspective for me that, you know, it is a game of failure. You're going to fail. You're going to struggle, but it's just getting through that. I think that the pressure can kind of be silent at times too. You know, if there's an instance.
What's that mean?
Well, I personally, I think of situations that I was in where I felt that pressure where, you know, at the beginning of the career, my dad might have, hey, you got two strikes on you. Why did you not expect a curveball coming? You got to hit that, you know? So not that he's saying that every at bat when I have two strikes on me, but when you get into that two strike count the next time, that voice is in the back of your head. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Dad's going to be mad if I miss this curveball. So it's just about being able to break it down to the level that the people that you're trying to mentor or model things for are able to understand. So I think that I was able to kind of break out of that on my own, but not a lot of people are.
Yeah, and I think that circles back to how we started this podcast about the impact that it can make.
Yeah.
And you want to do your absolute best to not try to be perfect, because nobody is, but you want to do your best to try to be as impactful as you possibly can. And as parents, I mean, nobody loves their kids more than parents do,
right?
You know, and so you want to try to do the best, but sometimes you get blurred by the outside noise. And I know, like, as a coach, I've tried to, like, really define like the skills that were most important. And I'm not talking about, you know, how to hit a ball or how to throw a ball. And those are extremely important too, but I'm talking about like skills that go deeper, that have larger impacts to help you hit the ball or throw the ball or get up off the court when you've been knocked down. And I really think it's like four things. It's empathy, which basically means your ability to connect with people on a personal level. Yeah. And that's ties into the G word and actually using other words to describe how you feel. So there's connection there. And then communication, which I'm certain everybody understands how important communication is. Oh, yeah. And how detrimental things can be when you don't have great communication, and where our minds go to when we call somebody and they don't call us back. We assume there's something wrong, or they don't text us back. There's something wrong. But, you know, that's a breakdown in communication. So we automatically assume the worst. And it might not be that person might be extremely busy at that right. time when you're calling them, and then they just forgot,
yeah.
right? Because of the all the noise that we have in our worlds. There's a lot of distractions, but then it's the consistency. As I say, consistency is a superpower, and the ability to stack bricks even when you don't feel like it. And then finally, it's just passion and dedication, and showing them that through consistency, empathy, communication, and through passion and dedication, that you can show an unwavering commitment to them.
Yeah.
And I think from a coaching standpoint, a parent standpoint, or anybody else, that's at least a solid brick to stand on and say, okay, well, we've got a chance to make an impact here.
Yeah.
In a positive way, because you're going to make an impact regardless. You know, people think that they're not making impacts, but you are making impacts. It sometimes you don't know that you're making an impact. You might not know for, you know, 5 years until the student gets out of the classroom,
right,
or out of the high school or whatever, but you are making impacts, and it's either going to be positive or negative. And so take it and run with it. And that's kind of, you know, some of the why we wanted to talk about this and how important the circles are, and give you some tools to start working on, the same tools that we try to work on and try to get better at on a daily basis in our program.
Yeah, and I feel like that passion piece is a really important part of it, just because if you do kind of get a little bit over passionate about it and might put a little extra pressure on somebody, at least that brick is there that's building, and it's telling that player or person that you care. So if you have that passion there in the first place and start to notice, all right, it might be a little bit overboard, might be putting a little extra pressure on them, you can dial it back a little bit from there. But just having that initial passion kind of builds that trust and lets them know that you care about their success. I think that's a huge one for those traits and skills.
Very true. I think it would be sweet if our listeners could tag us on social media about some role models that they've had,
yeah,
and the impact they've had. I think it's a really neat thing when you start thinking back on it and on your life and who made an impact. Sometimes reaching out to that person is a pretty neat thing for the said person. I also know that Vince Lombardi said, "The measure of who we are is what we do with what we have."
I like that.
And you just take what you have and you do your absolute best with it. And if you can learn some tools and some skills, and you can learn some things to better impact people, whether it's just in your family or your team or just yourself, it's leads to a little bit more happiness,
yeah,
in life. And I invite everybody to consider how you can become impactful in life, and you can do it with things like empathy and communication and resilience and all those things. And I'm going to finish with some final thoughts on impact and some final thoughts on how important people's support systems are. And I'll kind of let you lead that a little bit.
All right. I think that the role that parents and role models and, you know, support systems play in an athlete's journey is very important. And I know we've talked a lot about, you know, it's oftentimes coming from those positions where they might be a coach or, you know, might be a teacher or somebody in the community. But I feel like I would be doing people a disservice if I didn't mention that the age and the spot in life where you're at don't really dictate whether or not you would be a great leader or role model or, mm-hmm, or support system in those, yeah, people's lives. I think that just being able to be there for them, have a little bit of emotional intelligence, you know, see, mm-hmm, what they're going through and kind of try to relate to them, that empathy aspect, and, you know, just have passion for their growth and development. I think that's something that could go a long way in somebody's life, and you might not even realize it at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Be sure to celebrate the impactful people in your life. Make winning in life your habit, not your goal. Remember, excellence is a daily practice, not just a prize. Build great habits and practices that serve you so you can serve others. And don't forget to cherish the small moments. They pass by in a blink of an eye. Until next time, thank you to all of our listeners. Ultimately, we're all playing a game we cannot win. So why not play it to the utmost? Go all in and go Stars. Coach Cuts Corner is recorded live in the WLNZ studios with Dalian Lowry and Jeremy Robinson providing engineering and production assistance. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it and follow us on all forms of social media. Our program has been built and maintained with the help of many great people. If you want to be part of our mission, you can donate using the link in the show notes below. You can learn more at CoachCutter.com and more about our team at LCCStars.com. See you next time.
Keep connected with LCC Connect at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College's downtown and west campus offer newly renovated conference and event spaces that can accommodate over 500 attendees. Professional event planners are available to guide you through your experience from setup to catering. For more information about LCC's conference and event spaces, visit lcc.edu and search conference.
Keep yourself connected with what's happening in mid-Michigan by joining us for Community Convos, a show from LCC Connect, where we talk with the people who put the festive in our festivals and those that give traction to our attractions. Find out who's on the convo and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I joined the Navy to serve my country. While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open, and I broke my neck.
Thanks to PVA, Paralyzed Veterans are getting specialized medical care and treatments, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need.
I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Learn more at PVA.org.
Lansing Community College welcomes transfer students. Transfer students may apply prior credits toward their LCC degree, certificate, or transfer program. Learn more at lcc.edu/youbelong.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
It's time for Stars on Sports,
a podcast radio show dedicated to sharing stories about our athletic program at Lansing Community College.
LCC Athletics has a strong tradition.
24 national championship wins.
Over 170 All-Americans.
19 MCCAA All-Sports trophies.
Stars on Sports will introduce you to individuals that have contributed to our program's success and give you the backstory on what it takes to develop it.
We'll also dive into and break down the topics and issues facing athletic departments across the nation and right here at LCC.
This is Stars on Sports.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Stars on Sports. I'm joined today by our assistant athletic director, Stephen Cutter, and our producer, Dalian Lowry. And gentlemen, we're going to be carrying on a conversation we've had with previous podcasts, but also the timing of this year, you know, in the middle of the postseason for our fall sports, wrapping up postseason. And talking to a colleague the other day, he said there are two kind of coaches, the coaches that play to win and coaches that are afraid to lose. And again, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about coaching characteristics, and that wasn't really one we hit on. But it's also one we deal with a lot in our business, especially, you know, me as a leader of coaches. And I haven't really digested if I totally believe in that, but we see a lot of situations where in games, and again, I talk about the postseason, because if you lose, your season is over. So, you know, different variables could go into those decision making. But it also happens during the regular season, probably in bigger games or games against stronger opponents, where people sit back and say, well, they played
to win, or they played and they were afraid to lose. And
so, like, the prevent defense in football?
Bend but don't break. Yeah, exactly. That is, you know, a good example at towards the end of the game. And, you know, sometimes when you have a big lead in any sport, that you might change your mindset and stop being aggressive and be more cautious or reserved. And if that momentum changes, we've seen a lot that momentum is huge in sports, that, you know, it can impact that game. And when I was doing research for this podcast about the differences of playing to win versus avoiding to lose, cautious and aggressiveness, risk-taking were some of those big differences in the approach to those games. And you're right, it could be any game. And in this, in my colleague's case, he thought it was a characteristic that you have to, like, if you know a coach is afraid to play, afraid to lose, that you got to work with them on trying to get them to play to win. And, you know, we've talked a lot about that on podcasts. It's your belief system. It's your default system. But, or can they not change? Or are they always like that? And, you know, I see some coaches that maybe play to win too much and aren't cautious enough, and those risks might bite them too. So in the end, I'm not sure it's a defining characteristic of a coach, but because as you mentioned, it could be even the change of style during a game. But I think it's definitely something we spend our share of time talking about when we're talking about coaches in, I don't want to say big games, but any games.
Definitely an interesting topic you picked this morning. So it kind of made me think of you've got somebody that's playing to win and somebody that's trying not to lose or afraid of winning, however you want to term it. And I think the playing to win is, if you're going to coach people into playing to win, it's going to come down to process. And if you're going to work with fear of failure or losing, it's going to come down to focusing on results. And if you focus on the processes, you know, solid processes, and that doesn't change, it doesn't matter what the score is, you don't go into a prevent defense, you know, you're going to have more success. It might not always be immediate, but it will be down the road. And if you're fighting the other side of it, where you're just basing everything off of results, like, we have to win this game, you know, we can't lose this game, that kind of stuff, that's so immediate that you're really going to struggle and ride roller coasters of emotions, which then you're going to see it on coaches' faces and players' faces and everything else.
See, you didn't need to prep for this podcast, because that's a key component. And I believe some of the most successful coaches is broken down by play. Win the play, do your job, and not worry about the scoreboard. And unfortunately, we see too often where people do worry about the scoreboard. And
because you're judged by the scoreboard.
And the scoreboard can determine your fate too, especially in the postseason where, you know, that could be your last game. It could be the end of your season with that team. But you're right. In looking at this, the coaches that demonstrate playing to win are more performance-based approach and more achievement-based approach. And the ones that usually look like they're avoiding to lose are more result approach, that the scoreboard is impacting their decision-making and whether they become, again, the word cautious or minimal effort or, you know, but also excuses was another word that came in a lot of those that avoid to lose. And that's more a culture thing or a philosophy thing than necessarily an individual play or game thing, because, you know, it's more after the fact that you make excuses of why you lost instead of ownership or accountability or risk taking or being aggressive. And you mentioned, we've seen it before. It can change right in the middle of the game. But in the end, it is about performance based or your goals and not the scoreboard. So do you believe you can change that if a coach, you know, I mean, how do you work on developing those processes to become more playing to win than avoiding to lose?
Yeah. You know, the couple of words we use in our program a lot is stack bricks, and that is a process based thing. And it's a lot of invisible growth when you first start, when you put that first brick down or even the second brick down, and it takes a long time. And that's probably the hardest part about, like, trying to win in life or win on teams, is it takes much longer than you know even could imagine. It's a heck of a process. But when you invest in the process and you believe in the process and you have people that are pulling on the rope together in the team environment, it looks different, it feels different, and that scoreboard takes care of itself more often than not. And there's not a fear of failure because you're just relying on the process that you built. You believe in that process and you're not worried about the wall falling over. You're thinking about how do I stack the next brick? And that's something that is, I think, hard for everybody because at young ages, kids turn into coaches after, you know, some of them after they're done playing, but they, at young ages, they get, you know, graded on, you know, their tests and how a basketball player's asked, how many points did they score and did you win the game and all that stuff. So that's kind of where it starts.
And you are exactly right again, Mr. Gutter. Give him a gold star because it does start at the belief system. And we've talked a lot about stacking bricks on this podcast, and stacking bricks is celebrating the little wins. And if you celebrate those little wins, that helps you when more is on the line of building confidence and building in your belief system, which playing to win is big. But to the other side of that, you're right. Negative experiences when you're young or not embracing failure are a lot of other attributes that lead to playing to avoid to lose instead of playing to win. So, you know, having the eye on the prize or a threat versus a challenge and changing that mindset. But yes, negative experiences or losing big games or, you know, back to even when you were young, how you were taught to handle failure. And that's one of the nice things about educational athletics is you handle adversity. We talked about handling adversity before, but we still see many instances of people not being able to handle it well or quit and move on to something else. And from the things I saw, that plays in a lot to, in key moments, you revert to your default belief system. And that is, you know, are you afraid of failure or do you want to embrace it? You know, and I've used the Scottie Scheffler example on this podcast before, and I wasn't even bringing it up today, but, you know, when he was on the last day of the Masters, which a lot of pressure on him, you know, they asked him, how did you handle it? And he goes, I'm going home and I'm going to be Scottie Scheffler when I win the Masters or not. And I think too often or not, we put too much emphasis on, did we win the World Series? Did we win the national championship? Instead of, you know, doing those, stacking those bricks and building a program.
Most of that stuff comes from extrinsic things, you know, fame, fortune, it's all and extrinsic stuff. And the process stuff is more intrinsic. And it comes down to, it doesn't matter what team it is or what organization it is. It comes back down to, you know, how bad do you want it?
Yeah,
and it you will find all kinds of excuses from people, teammates that don't want it that bad. Want really boils down to like how much do you love what you're doing, and if you don't love it that much, you'll have a lot of excuses of why, you know, things aren't going that way. But if you truly love something, you'll find a way. You will find a way, and that's what the great teams do. They find ways, and then people look at them and are like, "That's I don't know what they're doing, but that's just incredible."
You're doing a great job of segueing today for not even knowing what our podcast is, but it does. Nice effect. There's our number one producer for you. But it is habits. It's developing habits. And again, looking at those teams that play to win, it's commitment. It's how bad you want it. Those are two good things. And another topic we haven't really hit on a lot on this podcast, but we have talked a little bit before, and something I'm big on is self-efficacy, the belief that you can achieve a certain outcome, and then collective efficacy is even bigger of a team believing in that they can do something. But they're working on those habits every day and being committed and having that desire. Another thing is recovering quickly from adversity. And one of the great things I've learned from a podcast and with Brian Kane is, what's your plan? What happened? And what the next best decision? And, you know, in sports, you don't have a lot of time to respond or think, especially in the big moment. But if you simplify your process and really
life's the same. I mean, you just don't have a lot of time. Things are happening at, you know, breakneck speed, and you've got to figure out, you know, where you're at, what happened, and how you're going to respond to it. And often, you know, and I've found myself going down these rabbit holes at times too, where it's like, I'm just not going to respond, you know, and that's where you got to get back into the brick stacking and process and respond. And that's what winning teams do. That's what winning organizations do. And that's why you see teams and organizations consistently win quarter after quarter, year after year.
Yeah, because, and it is winning teams back to playing to win. Those are characteristics of what those teams that do win. And, you know, and the other thing when recovering quickly, which again is what, how do you respond and what that next best decision is, taking risks. And I'm not a big risk taker. And I also wonder if that's something that our culture or program, and I'm talking sports, you know, where coaches are like confident in a way they do think, that it's hard for them sometimes to take too great of risks, or hard for them to deviate from their plan because they, back to self-efficacy, they believe in that plan. But in key moments, and, you know, again, back to my earlier thing I said, taking risks also helps you move forward, because if you continue to do the same thing over and over, one, it's insanity, but two, you can't go from here to there. And in those moments of a game where you're either playing to win or avoiding to lose, those coaches that look like they're playing to win are the ones that like are continuing to still take risks, that they're continuing to put themselves out there, and they might fail. And back to, it's okay to fail, and they're confident in fail. And do you believe that having past success helped with that? Because you, it might have already given you a proven track record then.
Yeah, it's the belief circle. So yeah, for sure. You know, it starts with belief and then goes to action, then goes to results, and it's a circle. So once you have some success, you're going to put in, you know, more action to have more of it. And then lo and behold, with more action, you have better, more results, you know. So it's a constant circle, and it can be positive or negative. Do you feel like at the high school level, this shows up more than it does at the college level? Because you spent a long time at the high school level, and you were at, you know, some different places. Was this prevalent?
Again, I think it's situational. I think it's back to, I'm not even sure this is right either, that maybe younger or more inexperienced coaches might be in that playing to avoid to lose instead of playing to win. So I think I see it at all levels. At the high school level, it's, again, maybe it's more postseason, or again, for league championships or something on the line, but certain coaches at that level do a nice job of playing to win and staying true to doing the thing that they need to, win. So I think it's more back to that belief system or that experience than the level of coaching, because coaching, there's a lot of similarity that all three levels on what it takes to be successful. It's more the in-depth things that change from each level. So
experience certainly matters. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. But there's also that external pressure that comes from the expectations of others and what people are saying and social media and all those type of things that play into it, which then all of a sudden make winning seem like this great thing that we have to do. And then you lose sight of all the details of what makes up winning. Cause to win, it's not easy, but it's not that difficult either. If you focus on a solid process.
But I think that is also a key tribute in avoiding to lose or playing to win, is if you've done it before, if you have won, you have that record and you have that maybe little flexibility to be more risk-taking. But I also think there's certain personalities that's just built into them because of maybe back to the confidence they've had or experience they've had in other fields or certain things. But it still goes back to, I think, what you say is what defines you. And our society defines our teams on whether they win or lose, yet from the inside, there are so many more things that we use to define our program besides winning championships. Obviously, we like to win championships. Obviously, that's a goal to win championships. But there's certain more things that we're trying to teach and learn from that define us. But if you are defined by winning or losing, I can see where you might be afraid to take risks because you don't want to lose, you know, that's more afraid to lose than, again, it's like, I hate to lose more than I like to win, Yvonne Lindell said. And, but for some people, you know, that pressure of having to win
It's a real thing in the coaching world, mm-hmm. for sure, and I think it's a real thing in the athletics world as well. It's those expectations. You are expected to win, and if you don't, then you know coaches lose jobs and players get released, and you know it's a real thing. And so that's an outside pressure. That is stuff that you absolutely have a ton of control over if you can focus on process-based, you know, put yourself into a growth-based environment or a growth-based team, that kind of stuff. Your processes matter, will affect everything that happens down the road.
And it sure will, and it will affect the final outcome. Do you think, like, looser teams or team, I mean, I'm looser teams, like they're just more relaxed or more, you know, teams that have fun are in a better situation to handle that avoid to lose or play to win scenario?
I think I've researched a lot of, you know, what drives winning. How about we just leave it at that? And, there's nothing like across the board that's like a slam dunk, whether it's, you know, it's a super loose team or a team that's really locked in. There's nothing really across the board that says this is who does best. It really is so much about anytime it's not about you. You know, you're in with a team or a group. It's so much about that group being able to come together and come together in ways that is at a deeper level. And so with that deeper level, there becomes some care and some love. And then once the love starts building, you know what else starts building? The trust. And man, you hear about it all the time on great teams, great organizations. Man, there's just ton of trust, ton of love here, you know, and that's like the true secret sauce. And that stuff is so hard to build because everybody is going to be a little bit different. And so if you've got people sitting at our round table here and they're not super in love with what they're doing, that's really hard to get them to pull on the rope with everybody else. And so you got to have some like-minded individuals, and that's what the best teams and best organizations have.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then somewhere in there we talked about those tight-knit groups can take those risks because they trust each other. They have each other's back. They're not going to blame. They're not going to make excuses. Exactly. You know? So accountability is a part of that. But also even like, does it take getting there first to learn how to do it? Like, you know, we've even seen even at our level of trying to beat that team that's beaten you the last couple of years, or you're beating that team but end up losing to them. But learning how to win, kind of, does that play into playing to win versus avoiding to lose?
Experience matters.
It does. It would come down to experience. So
even it caught up with the Fab Five, you know, they were delusional enough to make it, you know, happen, but it still caught up to them.
But I don't think they ever won any championship, no Big Ten or national championship. So, and it does catch up to you. That in the end, back to the process and the performance approach instead of result approach, that, you know, if you focus on your performance, that that's what you can control. I mean, we control our attitude and our effort, which we've talked a lot about too. And winning teams, I think, understand that, and no play is bigger than the other play. We always focus on the last play of the game or the last bad call of the game, but there were many other calls that went into that play. So I thought it was good conversation. I thought it was an interesting conversation I had with a colleague about that situation, because as we get into postseason in a lot of sports, a lot of people want to sit back and criticize coaches for either playing to win or avoiding to lose. And in my role as an athletic director, I want to help them go from one side to the other to learn how to play to win. But it's helping them build that belief system, stacking bricks and being comfortable it's okay to fail. You know, we'll come back stronger. We'll learn. We'll embrace failure and be better from it. All right, good stuff. So as we head into our end of the podcast, I'm stealing this from another podcast I listened to, but you know, I always start with a food question. So there's going to be a two-part food question, this one. So French fries, tater tots, or onion rings?
You can only have one?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I think I'd roll with the tater tots.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Kind of brings me back a little bit to that, you know, elementary cafeteria, you know, and that incredible school pizza they'd have there. Is that square thin pizza? Yeah. That stuff was incredible.
Yeah, it's a no contest for me. It's tater tots all the way. Wow. Oh yeah. If a restaurant has tater tots, I will always get tater tots before I will fries.
Okay.
Well, I'll even pay the extra $1.50 or whatever it is.
What a trifecta. It is tater tots for me, too. And I think tater tots
loaded
are making...
Loaded tater tots even better.
I agree. I think they're making a comeback. I have seen loaded tater tots more on menus in the last year than ever, and they are excellent. I've seen some like larger tater tots, too, instead of the little ones you see on the breakfast.
And the crispier, the better.
I agree there, too. But loaded 100%. Tater tots is what's second, then? Yeah, are you guys onion ring fans? Or
I enjoy like onion rings too. But they're not all created equal, you know. That's the other thing. So you get excited when someplace has onion rings, but then,
it would be fries for me after that. Onion rings do some stuff to my system that is not something I want to talk about.
Me too, but I love all three. I mean, I love French fries. I can eat French fries at probably every meal, but I like the other two better as a change of pace.
I'm also a finicky eater. I think we've talked about this.
Yeah,
and slimy,
greasy
onions that just
I'm not
remind me the texture reminds me of worms, and I don't dig it.
I don't disagree. I talked about how much I love cheeseburgers, and I don't want onions on my cheeseburger, but I do like onion rings. The only thing of onion I like is probably onion rings. I would take onions off everything else.
And give me some raw onions, I'm okay.
Really?
Yeah, I'll eat raw onions. I just don't like cooked onions. Just care for them.
Well, let's just kill this topic all at once. Let's go back to French fry, though. Okay, who had the best French fry?
McDonald's.
Are we talking fast food?
Anything.
I believe it's called Penn Station is my all-time favorite. Is it Penn Station or Penn Subs? I can't remember.
Penn Station. Penn Station.
Yeah. That's like the all-time best. And I don't typically will do vinegar with my fries.
Oh.
But those fries are so good with vinegar. And even to take it an extra level, you take the fry, you break it in two, so the vinegar gets inside the fry, and then you dip it into the ketchup, and it adds this like just awesome flavor to it.
Well, good tip. Do you like vinegar
bit of a
with
connoisseur
your fries?
On that.
I do. I feel like usually the best fries you can get are at the fair.
Oh, interesting. See,
yeah.
I like McDonald's fries too. Five Guys, I think, has good fries, and most people I know eat vinegar with the Five Guys one. They give you extra ones. I have not had Steak Shack fries, but the podcast I listen to, all of them really like Steak Shack fries. But there's just, again, in fries you can go curly fries, crinkle fries.
I was gonna say secondary would be Arby's, would be the curly
that's
fries.
A popular
those are pretty
one
tasty
too. Yeah. So. Well, again, I don't know where I come up with this stuff, but French fries, I like French fries, and it's lunchtime, so thought we'd talk about it. So
fair enough.
Until next time, go Stars!
Stars on Sports is recorded live at the WLNZ Studios. Engineering and production assistance are provided by Dedalion Lowry and Jeremy Robinson. You can listen to this episode and other episodes of Stars on Sports on demand at lccconnect.org. To find more information about our athletic program, visit lccstars.com. Thanks for listening. Go Stars!
This is WLNZ Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. To find out more about LCC Connect programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.